Welcome to Money Talk with MFLN Personal Finance. This podcast series offers brief recaps of our recent online professional development webinars targeted at personal finance managers and extension educators who work with military service members. I'm Molly Herndon, Program Coordinator for the Personal Finance Team, and I'm joined by Money Talk herself, Dr. Barbara O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill is a distinguished professor in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences at Rutgers University and is the Rutgers Cooperative Extension Specialist in Financial Resource Management. COVID-19 reached American soil months ago, and for many people, mental and physical fatigue are palpable. Sheltering in place has gotten very old, and weeks with a reduced or no income have thrown the finances of millions of households into a tailspin. Studies show that prolonged paycheck-to-paycheck living can sap mental bandwidth and stress mental health to the point that people are simply not fully functioning. What can people do? The only thing they can do, create some semblance of a routine and focus on things they can control. In this podcast episode, Dr. O'Neill and I discuss ways that personal finance managers and other helping professionals can help military families navigate change, loss, and uncertainty in this turbulent time. Thank you for listening. The extra $600 a week in unemployment benefits expired on July 31st. What should people do?
Well, I think the only thing that people can do, Molly, is to marshal whatever resources they can get. So look around for any possible sources of monetary support and human services in your community. With military families, also reach out to support services on the installation. Some of the examples of support services would include food pantries, various job training programs, particularly for military spouses, utility assistance programs. Probably the best source of information about local resources is 211. So people can either call 211 on their phone or visit www.211.org on their computer and should be able to find information about local human services agencies.
What about budgeting? Should people even bother trying to budget during the pandemic?
Yeah, I've heard people say that, like, why should I bother? I don't have any money. But I think the opposite is actually true, that budgeting is more critical now than ever before. And nobody has a crystal ball. So the only thing you can do is give your best estimate of your current income and expenses, and then consider different ways to close the gap as much as possible. So for example, if people are able to get free food at a food pantry, or they're spending less on childcare because the children are going to be home again, learning at home this fall, that money can be repositioned. Also, money, maybe people are spending less on gas and tolls. I read an article today about how the New Jersey Turnpike Authority is down so much money on revenue because people aren't driving and they aren't going through the toll booths. Meals eaten out, travel, you know, all of that expense money that you would have had before can now be repositioned toward the most important priorities in your budget, which are basic needs.
Right. So what expenses should people cut out?
Well, start with all the discretionary items. So these would be things that are nice but not necessary. Some of the things that would fall into this category is any spending that increases your debt in your household unless absolutely necessary. Even taking a look at non-emergency savings like the thrift savings plan, you may just need to suspend contributions until your finances stabilize. So that will probably require going online and changing the deduction that's taken out of a person's paycheck. Other ways to cut discretionary expenses would be eliminating auto payments for non-essential items. You know, this is where you really need to go through all the automated things that you have coming out, whether it's gym memberships or streaming services, and really pare them down to the absolute minimum. And then also just a simple strategy of switching to cash versus either a credit or a debit card for purchases, because studies have shown that people spend less on items when they purchase with cash versus plastic. And I think a lot of it has to do with when you take money out of your wallet, it feels like a loss and people don't like to feel losses. So we tend to be a little bit more frugal when we're buying things with cash than debit or credit cards.
Mm-hmm. How should people set bill paying priorities?
Well, probably you want to make a list of everything that you are paying and then kind of sort it into three lists, really. You've got your needs, you've got your obligations, and you've got your wants. So needs, by definition, are things that are necessary for survival. So things that fall into that category would be your housing, maybe a rent payment, utilities, food, co-pays for medications that you must take because of some health condition that you have, for example, maybe transportation that's necessary for getting to a job, for example, phone and internet, and health insurance. Most people would agree that those would be the necessary items in a family's budget. Then you've got obligations. So those would be things like credit cards, student loan payments, child support, taxes, dues to organizations, things that you've kind of obligated yourself to pay, but they don't necessarily fall into the category of necessary for survival. And then what's left is the wants. And these are things that are not required for survival. You don't have any obligation necessarily to pay them. And so what you want to do, of course, that when you prioritize is start out with the needs, work your way down to the obligations, and finally the wants. And sometimes people even do this with index cards where you'll just write out every item, or post-it notes would be another example of them. They kind of stick together. So I think the index cards sometimes work better. And you just simply keep moving the cards and putting the most important bills on top and then things that are of lesser importance toward the bottom.
How do people know which needs should come before the others?
Well, I think one of the best ways is to ask yourself the question, what is the consequence if I don't pay this bill? And ask yourself, what is the worst thing that can happen if I don't make this payment this month? And if you use that as kind of a lens to make your decisions, it helps you prioritize. So with this lens, food is always the highest priority need because people need food to survive. It's the most important thing, and water too, of course. So those are the things that people would have to put at the top of their list. But again, as I mentioned before, if food is available for free from a human service agency through their food pantry, let's say, then that can free up that money that would have been spent on food for another basic need. So it doesn't necessarily mean that if it's top priority, you have to be spending limited income for it. You may be able to find free food through a community agency.
Okay. How should people prioritize their personal and financial obligations?
Well, again, it kind of goes back to what I said before, that if you can kind of consider what are the consequences of delaying the payments, you know, who's going to hurt you the hardest, basically, is what it comes down to. And I was on a webinar recently that was for the New York Public Library, and they had a speaker from a credit counseling agency, and they suggested the following order that I'm going to give, not to say that this is set in stone, but it kind of gives you an idea of things that would be more harmful to you than others. They suggested that if funds are limited and you're looking through your obligations, you've already taken care of the needs, and now you have a little bit of money left for obligations, you're working your way down. They suggested this hierarchy, that you would start out with court fines and fees, because in some cases, they can arrest you, or they can have the fines and fees grow pretty rapidly. Child support would be toward the top. That would be a very important obligation for parents. Auto insurance, because obviously if you're driving a car, you've got to have your auto insurance. Various types of money judgments would come next. Secured debts would also be important. You know, if you've got a car, you want to make sure that car payment is paid so you don't have your car repossessed. Taxes and tax debt. And that speaker suggested contacting the IRS for a payment plan. You know, don't just ignore the IRS. Reach out to them and get some kind of payment plan going. And then as you work down the list of obligations, because again, the consequences aren't as severe as the things I've already mentioned, you would come to things like student loans, unsecured debts, where they're not going to take something away from you, like credit card debt, various types of insurance premiums. You know, sometimes what you can do with insurance companies is work out an arrangement to pay in small increments that you might be able to afford. For example, if you've been used to paying premiums semi-annually, let's say, or even annually pre-COVID, and now you've lost your job and you just can't do that anymore, it make at least the minimum payments on all your insurance. So you keep your insurance in force and you just pay small payments. You're going to end up paying more overall because they charge administrative fees when it's paid on a more frequent basis, but at least you'll keep your insurance. So that would be another obligation. And then on the bottom of the list of obligations would be retirement plan savings, because again, you can suspend that if you have to. And interpersonal debts and social obligations. So with interpersonal debts, it might be to a family member. You might be able to get some leniency there. And if it's a social obligation, whether it's dues or fees or something like that, membership types of things, you might just have to let those things go for a while. So again, it all comes down to asking what are the consequences of delaying payment, and the more severe consequences come first.
Mm-hmm. What should people do to protect their credit?
Well, the important thing there is to get in touch with creditors before they get in touch with you. So if you know you're going to be late with a payment, call them in advance. You know, if the payment's due on the 5th of the month, you want to be calling them, you know, maybe like the 20th of the previous month, and give yourself some time so that you can discuss options for leniency and, most importantly, some type of payment plan that you can afford. And you want to confirm it. You know, if you come up with an agreement with somebody, make sure that you have somebody's name, the date that you talk to them, the time that you talk to them, and try to get either an email or an address or something that you can confirm later with you, that on such and such date, we confirm that my payment will be reduced to X number of dollars, and you have it in writing. And it's really important that you do that, because nobody wants to damage their credit during this difficult time. And one thing I will mention too is that paying your bills on time is the most important factor in your credit score. And you don't want to damage their credit score. Most people have worked really hard to build their credit score, and the last thing they want to have is to have it, you know, start to go down. Under the CARES Act, Americans can actually get a free credit report every week. So if you think there might be a possibility that your credit score could be damaged by a late payment, even if you have some kind of agreement, you may want to make the extra effort to check it more frequently, as much as once every week, just to make sure that there hasn't been any damage to your credit history.
What else can people do to cope financially with COVID-19?
Well, if you've never done a net worth statement, that's a good thing to think about doing, because what you really doing there is you're adding up the value of your assets minus the amount of debts. And on one sheet of paper, on one Excel spreadsheet, if you want to do it on a computer, you've got a snapshot of your finances. And the reason you want to do this is to assess any household resources that you might have and the amount of those resources. So things that you would pay particular attention to would be how much cash do you have on hand? What is the amount of your emergency fund savings? Cash value life insurance, what the value of that might be? Any kind of retirement savings plan assets that could be borrowed against. So it just gives you a good sense of the resources that you might have available if COVID goes on and, you know, your situation worsens over time.
Do you have any other COVID-19 financial advice?
Well, another thing is many people may be behind on payments. You know, with some of the leniency provisions that have been out there, maybe you got some breathing room, but that didn't mean that those bills aren't coming due. So anything that you can do to catch up on, hopefully people have been using some of the extra unemployment benefits or other windfalls that they might have received, like a tax refund, as kind of a base of savings to get caught up, because some of these leniency provisions are starting to expire now and people will be contacted and need to pay back rent or back in utility bills and things like that. And hopefully you've set aside the money to do that. Another thing would be just to take advantage of anything that you can get through your employer for as long as it lasts. There have been some employers who, while they have laid off or furloughed their workers, have kept their insurance in force, their health insurance. And you want to take advantage of that for as long as it lasts. After that, there are the other options that people would have for coverage would be through their spouse's employer's plan if they can be added. And there might be a cost to doing that. But if the spouse is still employed, you can possibly add the unemployed spouse to that policy. Medicaid, if people are eligible by income. COBRA through the employer. As long as the employer stays in business, because if the employer goes out of business as a result of COVID, you can't be paying for benefits through an employer plan when the employer no longer exists. So that's touchy. My brother-in-law is unemployed, but his employer also went out of business. So there is no COBRA option there. And then probably where a lot of people are going to go anyway would be the marketplace through the Affordable Care Act. And in most cases, Affordable Care Act options are cheaper than COBRA anyway. And particularly if somebody qualifies for the subsidies, as people may do now because they have a reduced income. So where people should go to get information about that would be healthcare.gov.
What should people do with respect to income taxes?
Well, for a lot of people this year, they're going to be in a lower marginal tax bracket because they've lost income. And many financial advisors recommend that if you have a traditional IRA, you may want to convert it, particularly at a time when you have a lower income, because when you do the conversion, federal income taxes are due on the converted amount. And this gets added in with your tax on other income sources that you might have, such as salaries. And the taxes are on the conversion are due in the year that you convert it. But since this will be a reduced income year for many people, they may want to consider doing that just to reduce their overall tax burden. Because what's going to happen is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is set to expire at the end of 2025, and tax rates will be poised to increase, and you would probably be very happy that you did these conversions at a time when tax rates are lower, and particularly in a year where your income might be lower. Another thing people should do with respect to taxes is just realize if you've gotten unemployment benefits, particularly these enhanced ones from the federal government that just expired, those are taxable. So hopefully people have been setting aside at least 10% and possibly as much as 20%, again, depending on your overall tax scenario, of that benefit for income taxes. And with many states, you have the option to check a box and have the taxes withheld from the benefit. But if you didn't do that, or that's not an option, then you should be sending quarterly estimated payments to the government so that your withholding is in proportion to the amount of income that you'll have. Otherwise, you're going to have a big shock come next April when taxes for 2020 are due. The other thing that people can do is change their W-4 form. And, you know, just take a look at your taxes. Now that we're into August, people are past the halfway point for the year, probably should have a pretty good sense of what their income and any tax deductions or credits that they may qualify for would be. And change the withholding accordingly. The IRS has a new withholding calculator on their website that people can use to do that. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that some people, because of losses related to COVID-19, may, for the first time in a long time or the first time ever, qualify for income-based tax credits, you know, things that they normally would have had too high an income to qualify for. So things in that category would include the earned income tax credit and the savers credit. So those things can also be put into the, you know, the hopper, if you will, for the W-4 calculation, so people can kind of plan for those in their taxes for the current year.
Mm-hmm. What should people do with respect to their investments?
Well, I think there you're just going to have to expect a lot of volatility. I mean, it's very interesting right now that we have such alarming news on the COVID-19 front and such alarming news with respect to unemployment and financial fragility of American households. And yet the stock market is not necessarily reflecting that. And that's typical that, you know, the stock market is Wall Street and the economy is what they call Main Street, and they don't necessarily go in sync. But having said that, I think we're going to expect in the years to come some major volatility when things happen. You know, anytime there's uncertainty, whether there's uncertainty about a vaccine or maybe a trial for a vaccine doesn't work, or political changes, any number of things can set off the stock market. So just accepting the fact that the value of your investments are going to rise and fall. And this is part of what we call an investor's mindset, that you just need to realize that that's part and parcel of investing. And hopefully have a portfolio that is well diversified by asset class. And then even within each asset class. So the asset classes would be things like stocks, bonds, and cash equivalent assets. And then the securities within each asset class. You know, you might have tech stocks and transportation stocks and healthcare stocks. And so you get good diversification within the assets that you have.
Is there anything else people can do to improve their financial security?
Well, here's one that a lot of experts are talking about, and that's upskilling yourself, you know, finding new and improved job skills. Some people have compared the employment market now and the major unemployment that we're seeing as equivalent to playing a game of musical chairs with 100 people, and the music's going, and then all of a sudden the music stops, which is kind of like the way the economy has stopped. We're kind of in pause. And then all of a sudden they take away 50 chairs, and 50 people are left without a chair to sit on in this hypothetical game of musical chairs. And that's pretty much what we have now, is that we just have a lot of people who their jobs may not be there to go back to, or the employer may be hiring fewer people because it's going to take a long while to scale back up to the amount of business that they were doing pre-COVID. So anything that people can do in their newly found free time to upskill themselves, it could be a college degree, it could be certification program credentials, it could be new tech skills, any other traits that employers are valuing right now. Think about your skill set and what you do well and what you still wish you knew how to do, and figure out a plan to try to build those skills. I think that's one thing everybody can do to improve their financial security. Another thing is just to keep increasing your financial literacy. I always like to encourage people to learn one new thing a day about personal finance, because if you can build your financial knowledge can help build your preparedness, and that preparedness can increase your resilience during the tough times that we're experiencing right now. So I think all of those things, the upskilling, the financial literacy, those are all very important.
So let's shift now from finances to other aspects of life that have been impacted by COVID. What are some of the biggest non-financial issues that are facing people, that people are facing related to COVID-19?
Well, I think a big one is lack of a schedule. I mean, when you think about it, you know, kids have a schedule when they go to school. Adults have a schedule or a routine when they go to work. And for many people, we're going on the sixth month of not really having a firm schedule with boundaries around that schedule. So I think it's really important, particularly now that we're heading toward the fall, and some kids have already gone back to school already. I kind of hard to fathom that as a person who formerly lived in the Northeast and school didn't start until after Labor Day, but some kids are already going back to school or they're doing school from home, and a schedule is going to be really important. Stephen Covey talks in his book about having the big rocks that you put into a jar. Those are your top priorities. Well, think about the big things in your day as some of the big rocks. And, you know, physical activity can be a rock. Having some time devoted to work, some homeschooling. I think people just need to have some type of schedule and structure, at least for the weekday. Because otherwise, everybody's saying every day feels the same, and it kind of does, because it's not happening with a plan. So a plan can be really important.
Mm-hmm. What can people do to not feel so out of control?
Well, I think the only thing you can do is control what you can. And I heard a strategy recently on a webinar that I thought was pretty good. They suggested that you get a sheet of paper and you just draw three columns down the sheet. And one column is control. The second column is adapt. And the third column is monitor. And then what you do is you list things under each of those categories. So, for example, in the control category, you would have control over your daily schedule. If you create a routine and you know, I'm going to do this in the morning, this in the afternoon, that sort of thing. You have control over your self-care activities, you know, how you physically take care of yourself, how you eat, how you exercise, sleep, that sort of thing. You have control over home organization tasks, you know, different routines related to that. And you have control over your spending. to the extent that it's not a fixed expense, but, you know, some of the discretionary things that we talked about before. So those are like controllable items, and list as many of those that as you can, related to finances, related to school, if that's an option for kids, anything that's kind of part of your lifestyle. Think about what you can kind of control. And then in the second column, you would have all the adapting kind of things. So, for example, for a lot of people, working from home has been a big adaptation. And there's all sorts of things that people might have to do around that. You know, you don't have your IT support anymore at your employer because everybody's working from home. So you may have to start doing more computer things yourself or getting new equipment. You know, I've read a number of articles that have talked about the fact that people are getting serious now for the fall, because in the spring, when people were sent home in a hurry, everything was kind of haphazard. And now people are realizing, ooh, the kids could be home and go doing school for 6 months, maybe a year. I could be doing the same for work. So they're going out and they're buying, you know, better computer setups and second monitors and all that kind of thing. And then the third column is monitor. So these are things that you want to monitor, you know, things that are affecting the decisions at your home micro level. These are like the macro level things. So that's going to be, you know, things like the progress on the vaccine, different rules that your state would have as to, you know, what's shut down and what's open. Of course, policies that employers will have around, you know, working from home and then school for the kids. All of those things people will need to monitor, because obviously they're going to be subject to those changes when they occur.
What else can military families do to weather the COVID-19 storm?
Well, I think for everyone, whether you're in the military or not, three things that I heard again on another webinar. I've been trying to monitor webinars to get ideas to pass on. Somebody suggested that you try to be grateful, helpful, and creative. So if you think about those three words, they're really powerful words. They suggested that if every day you can list five things that you are grateful for, you can either do it at the beginning of the day or maybe as kind of a closure at the end of the day, five things that you are grateful for. What they have found in research is that this can help people foster optimism because, again, they realize that there are some good things in their life, even though there's a lot of bad going on. I heard a video clip just the other day that was from Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook, that she lost her husband unexpectedly a couple of years ago. And she was working with a counselor, and he kind of reframed it on her. You know, what are you grateful for? And she had this negative reaction. She said, well, I can't be grateful. I just lost my husband. You know, and he tried to reframe it and said, yeah, but it could have been worse, because he had some kind of heart thing. And said he could have been driving the car and killed your kids as well in an accident. And then she realized that she didn't have the worst situation, that it could have actually been worse. So I think being grateful is important. The next one was helpful. So find ways to support others. And in a military community, that's often very easy to do, because families tend to bond and support one another. And by helping other people, it's not only helping them, but it's also helping the helper feel good. And then the creative part is just all the workarounds that people are doing right now, whether it's the Zoom parties and the video clips that people are putting on TikTok and the different face masks that people are making and, you know, all those creative things. I've been working with some teachers, and they all created Bitmoji classrooms where they have the little cartoon pictures of themselves, and they're setting up their virtual classrooms for their kids. And I just set up a Bitmoji office yesterday. So, I mean, just fun, creative things like that are really important too. So grateful, helpful, and creative.
Right. That's great. Is there anything else that you would recommend?
Well, I think sometimes we just need to stop and take some deep breaths and just acknowledge that it's okay to feel confused and it's okay to feel overwhelmed, especially because there's no end in sight. You know, when this first started, most of us were thinking, oh, it'll be over by the summer, it'll get hot, you know, and we're not saying that. And so I was on another webinar recently and they were just talking about ambiguity and just the fact that we've got to learn to embrace ambiguity, because we just can't necessarily know everything that's going to happen. And so just acknowledging the fact that it's okay to be confused, it's okay to be overwhelmed. Big parts of our lives have been turned upside down. And particularly for parents with kids, it's really hard because people aren't balancing work and family. They're balancing work with family, you know, and both of these things are taking place at the same time instead of being kind of compartmentalized, you know, where you're at work for a time and then you're at home. Everything's kind of jumbled in together. So, you know, realize that you're not alone. Many people are feeling the same way. And health experts do recommend just a lot of deep breathing, just as a way to reduce stress. Find a happy place in your house, too. You know, it could be maybe an outside patio under a tree, and go to your happy place when you just need to, you know, decompress a little bit. All of that can be really helpful.
Final question, where can listeners go to get additional information about coping with COVID-19?
The Military Families Learning Network, we just did a webinar very recently in June about resiliency resources, and we talked about financial resources and social resources and kind of personality, organizational types of resources. So I would refer people to the webinar that we just did. And we also had a wide variety of resources. So there were different handouts that people can use. Of course, they can download the copy of the slides as well and have that available as they watch the webinar. I think that would be helpful for a lot of people. Hopefully, it'll give you some ideas of additional resources that you might not have thought about and things that might be useful to help you get through this.
Okay. And there will be a link to that webinar page in the show notes for this podcast. So thank you so much. This has been a great interview with you.
Thanks, Molly.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening today. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcast or on Stitcher. Visit MilitaryFamiliesLearningNetwork.org to RSVP for upcoming webinars, watch recorded webinars, and read blog posts for military service providers. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.